Yes, classes were large in city schools. It was normally expected the class, no one would complain until the class got more than 30. 30 would be a normal class. And it would be quite an experience for an 18-year-old to teach a lesson, never having tried to teach anything like that to a group at all. So we were all instructed that you had to plan your lesson, and there were 5 steps in the lesson. I forget the exact steps now, I shouldn't. Well, then, before you went out to teach your first lesson, you were given the topic, you knew the grade, you knew the school, and the principal's name, and the teacher's name, and where it would be, and the topic. So then you had to prepare your lesson plan, your aim, and the way you'd do it, and the main part, and your review, and having done that, you'd go to the school, and you'd do your best. And I must say that the regular classroom teachers were most helpful, and the classes were most generous. They were very kind to us. But afterwards, of course, during that time, a member of the normal school class would drop in for an indefinite period of time, like either the whole lesson or part of the time. Sometimes the principal would drop in. So sometimes you might have 3 people, the classroom teacher, the principal, and normal school instructor, there, and you were doing your best, struggling through, trying to remember your aim and various things that you had been cautioned to do during the course of your lesson. Afterwards, the day afterwards, there'd be a list on the board, and your name would be on the list, and you would be requested to appear at a certain time to a certain instructor's office, when he or she would review your lesson. And there were many, many occasions when, after much trepidation, many poor people came out feeling very dejected and despondent. Although, by and large, I must say the staff were most encouraging and helpful, but inevitably there would be times when there would be periods feeling it wasn't worth it at all. I think that's all on the teacher part of it. Those periods. Mm-hmm. No, you ask about the auditorium and the bus and the frieze at the back. I remember them being there, and I suppose at one time I probably knew not perhaps where they came from, but certainly who was represented. I don't know. It'd be quite appropriate for them to be in a normal school, and perhaps they were standard equipment in normal schools across Canada. Right now, I forget the origin of the word normal, why normal became attached to teacher training institutions. It's in many ways it's a very inappropriate word. The frieze at the back is if I remember rightly, it's a replica of a Greek, well-known Greek frieze, and I suppose it was there. I suppose to encourage us in this annual report for 100 years of education. There's a picture of a Victoria, a normal school art room, which has various artistic embellishments on the back. There, I no doubt they were in our art room too. It was probably the same art room, but I don't recall them now. It was the room on the northwest corner, having a north light. Maybe even the room that the media were in last year. I don't know if they were the windows blacked out there or blocked out. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. The The ordinary examination, the high school course in those days, was entirely an academic course. I had an odd career. I didn't really go to high school and got my matric at Strutshall Night School and wrote McGill matric. That's a carryover from the days of Victoria College being part of McGill. And the only external way of writing an external matriculate exam was do it through McGill. But the course was similar to UBC, which would be the BC course, and it was English, French, Latin, mathematics. Now you can have, oh, and history. And you can have a choice of English and French, and history and math. You can have a choice of a third language or a science. Science was not a common subject in most schools because of lab facilities. And really, until about that time, there was practically no general science of any type in the schools at all. So I wrote English, French, Latin, history, and math. And later on, when I took my first year, again, I didn't go to Victoria College. I did it by correspondence with Queen's. That was the only way you could do anything. It didn't give you much help. But I did English, French, Latin, mathematics, and they wouldn't allow history as a subject then. You had to do a science. So I labored long, long hours, having never done any science, to do my physics. And of course, I didn't go down to Kingston to do the lab work. And after normal school, when I went across to UBC for their summer session, they wouldn't give me credit for Queen's physics because I hadn't done it there. So I took the whole course and did the lab work there, and then my French too. But most people did French and Latin in those days, and math, and in some cases history. And it wasn't until a few years later, perhaps with the introduction of this junior high school, that science came in at all.
When you were at the normal school then, did you not have a science class?
No. Mr. Freeman took nature study. Now, on the old timetables, that's another thing we had to work out, was timetable and give the proper amount of time to the various schools. Nature study, believe it or not, was the only linear thing to science we had. There was perhaps a very little bit of smatterings of general science that probably would now be down in grade 2 or 3, I suppose. There was art. We all expected to do some artwork. There was language, which included English, and grammar, syntax, old composition, arithmetic, spelling. Oh, yeah, spelling, well, yeah, art and spelling. Singing, PT, geography and history, Mr. Denton, and so that is basically a general the elementary school.
Did you have the writing class?
And the writing. Mr. McLean, who was at the Vancouver Normal School, had perfected, or at least he had. He made the best of most of an opportunity. He developed the McLean muscular movement of writing. And I worked hard at normal school. I had, I believe, half-decent writing at the beginning of the year, and I tried hard on this muscular movement. And I'm sorry to say that my writing has always been the same since. And the only thing that I did not managed to achieve at normal school was my McLean muscular movement writing certificate. All my friends did, but I was never able to bring it up to that. I thought it had certain advantages, but there'd been much criticism of that also. But no, there was no science at all. This is elementary school, and I would think that those who took teacher training at the secondary school level probably didn't get very much either. In those, at that time, for a little while, people with an acceptable degree, arts or science, would go to a normal school up till Christmas, and then go on to the very new Department of Education at UBC. And Mr. Wood, after being at Victoria for 3 or 4 years, went over mainly to the Department of Education at UBC. He did, and there was a good deal of interchange or of borrowing from other departments, various people. Somebody gave from the psychology and philosophy section, gave education psychology in the department. Somebody, various people gave lectures in the department. It was very, very small indeed. Dean Coleman, I think, was the head of it, and Dean McCannon, though, was very interested in it. But Mr. Wood, for a time, was one of the main members of it, until he became assistant registrar, and then moved over to become registrar, and continued for many years, and when he died, retired a few years ago as registrar emeritus of UBC. But during the Depression years, I remember up in Duncan, coming to the Duncan High School. Laurie Wallace came there a year or two later, which was a small high school, but the principal was a former UBC engineering graduate. Indeed, but he wasn't anything doing in mining engineering at that time, and he'd taken teacher training course at UBC, which was a shorter course than our normal school course. There may have been some science training given to teaching of science, but he would have some basic science in his course, and this is what often happened, that somebody on the staff would have had some academic, university-level science training, but as far as the teaching of science, it didn't appear until the high school level.
When you were at the normal school, did you have the morning assemblies?
Oh, yeah, I missed that. I think the classes were an hour, but I'm not sure. They may have been 45 minutes. It seems to me that when I went to UBC summer sessions and they were 55 minutes, I found them long. As far as I know, we began at 9, or maybe a bit before, but I think it was 9. It all depended upon that number 10 street car, but I think it was 9 to 12 and 1 to 3. And I think we had 3 periods in the morning, 3 in the afternoon. But we always began with an assembly in the auditorium, and the auditorium was quite loud enough to take probably 175, certainly easy, took hours. The staff would be on the stage, and that's not the big stage they have now, that's a little tiny stage. If you look at it sometime, it would take at most perhaps a dozen people if you be very careful. But the staff was there, and they're quite high up. But we always began, as all schools did in those days, with the Lord's Prayer. And there was just, it was unthinkable to start any school anywhere without the Lord's Prayer. Then there'd be announcements by the principal or anybody else that had any announcements to make. And they were frequent. There were all sorts of things there. And as far as I can remember, Miss Riddell, who taught primary work and singing, but then took over for whatever the remaining time there might be between the announcements and the first class. And we had a group, the school, it'd be singing. There were always plenty of girls pianists there. And we would learn from every now and again a new song. There were 5 Coney and Wicketts brown-covered songbooks for schools, music and words. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. And we would learn these songs because probably we were going to use them in our schools because these books were prescribed for the school. So we would learn to sing them, and we'd have a little exercise on top so far, you know, do, re, mi, and what and that. And we would learn a song or two, every now and again, and we'd sing 1 or 2 songs that we knew before we went off to work. Reminds me of Snow White and 7 Dwarfs. But this was daily, every day. And it wasn't a bad way to begin a day. We're all there together. Begin with the Lord's Prayer. We have announcements for the day's routine or the next day too. And we have a song which sort of, there's a sense of sort of togetherness about a song, and then we went off to our classes. There were only three classes, so that you didn't have to travel very far. And I don't know how much time was given, certainly not more than 5 minutes. There was a, perhaps you were given another minute or two. I think perhaps the PT was perhaps the last one in the morning. At least it seemed to be that way for us, because we always needed to change into, I don't think we changed down completely, I forget, but we always had to put on different shoes and stripped off. Of course, in those days, we all wore a shirt and a tie. And a suit, I think. I don't think I ever wore a jacket and odd trousers, a two-piece outfit, until after the Second World War. I always wore a suit at school, and I always wore a shirt and tie. I think I was just getting out of the hard collar period. Just before, I may even have gone to normal school the first day or two with a hard collar on. Certainly all the staff would wear hard collars. our diplomas were mailed to us, and the results were announced in the paper sometime later, you know. But even so, there was the last morning, there was a gathering, and there was a, everybody, you know, the staff expressed their best wishes, and but it was a, I suppose we began, yeah, it began the same way. But it was a very nostalgic moment. And we had our annual, we got autographs. Yeah. And we ended up with, I don't know, we sang Maple Leaf Forever, Oh Canada. In those days, it was touch and go, or you could choose whatever you liked pretty well. But the national anthem was the normal way of ending any entertainment. In fact, you're probably too young to remember the fact that at the end of every moving picture show in town or anywhere else in BC, it always ended with the national anthem. And in those days, no one would have thought of moving or getting a coat or until after the end of that. Oh. Yes, Mr. Ainsley Helmkin, the city archivist, will be able to give you some information about the beginning of the building of that normal school, because he lived somewhere nearby. I know that when he attended the university school, he passed through the normal school frequently, and I can tell you something about the beginnings of the normal school. It, as you realize, it's on an excellent site, but there was a great deal of bedrock right in front of the entrance, which was removed, much to the disappointment of the Reverend Robert Connell, who was well known in Victoria. He was a Church of England, an Anglican clergyman, a naturalist, a writer, if not one of the founders of the CCF party with Woodsworth and the Steves, certainly one of the founders in BC, and I think perhaps one time a member of the provincial legislature. But and he wrote for, I think, the Times, a naturalist column, much after the fashion that Freeman King wrote in more recent times. But I knew Mr. Connell fairly well, because during my attempts to get my senior my English through Queen's, I had to get some assistance, and Mr. Connell, I went to Mr. McConnell. And I remember him telling me how saddened he was at the by the fact that the rocks in front of the normal school had been blown out. But they were apparently excellent examples of the glacial erosion back in the very early days. I believe that there are some examples of it still across Richmond Road to the west of the Normal School. But Mr. Connell felt that they somehow should have been maintained as examples of what the Ice Age had done to us. The grounds had been laid out, I think, fairly early on, but possibly during the First World War and for a little time afterwards, when there was a minor depression throughout Canada, 1921-1923, not a great deal had been done, but certainly by 1926, they were in much the same form as they are now, as far as the lawns, the rock walls on the Richmond side, the gates. Certainly there were plenty of rose gardens, pergolas there, but not the trees on either side of the main driveway. I'm told by one or two of my friends who attended normal school at that time that Dr. Gibson planted those, or had them planted, and since he was in charge of agricultural education with the province, it seemed quite likely. Certainly, they were not there when we attended in 26, and they may have been planted towards the end of 27, so they are 50, 51 years old. And I suppose they add to the appearance. It's certainly a different appearance from driving, going up there without anything. We had, during the year, we had a school garden. We all had to, we had a little plot. Every one of us had a little plot. And again, this would be Dr. Gibson's interest, I suppose. But I think, as far as I can recall, it was to the north, where the army huts are now. There must have been enough good ground in there. I know that I had forgotten about those till some of my friends at the reunion mentioned that I was the bane of the lives of most of them, because I have very large feet and the paths between the plots were so small that I couldn't help but encroach on other people's gardens. I was forever stamping out some of their prized seedlings or something. But can you imagine 135 students, each with a little, I don't know, a 4x8 or a plot on which we were encouraged to sow seeds and weed them and eventually go out to our little schools and encourage agricultural education. Of course, during the First War, perhaps more than the Second War, people were encouraged to use vacant lots, and there were hundreds around Victoria at that time that were ploughed and cultivated by people to grow food, to grow vegetables, mainly vegetables. I'm not sure how many school gardens resulted from our school garden, but it was another activity. I think Dunlop House, that's the house to the east of the normal school, I think it was there at that time. I do hope that in the expansion of Commotion College, this large new, I don't know, 100,000 square feet they're going to add or something, I do hope it doesn't come in front of the, I hope it won't be. I don't, perhaps they'll take out army huts and put it in the back there somewhere. But it's amazing to think of all the fact that building now is the center for, I presume, hundreds of people, at, even working in the halls. Certainly, we'll look forward to seeing the refurbished young building in 1980.